From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. David Sedaris is a pioneer. 26 years ago, the humorist busted through public radio's polite veneer as a begrudging department store elf in the Santaland Diaries. 10 books later, he is a best-selling author who draws thousands of fans to his public readings. And he dropped by the GPB studios earlier this week before a book signing in Decatur. David Sedaris, welcome.
Thank you so much.
So glad to have you here. And among the stories in Calypso, your new book, Family Gatherings at C-Section, your beach house in North Carolina. Where would you be without your family?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. I always felt so fortunate to have my family. Even when I was a child, I noticed other people, you know, they would eat dinner and then they would go to their rooms or go watch TV or something. And my dad would leave the table the second he finished eating, and the rest of us would sit around for hours and hours and hours every night. Like in high school, you wouldn't have a boyfriend or girlfriend. You wouldn't not be home, because that was the night I made pizzas and we watched scary movies on TV. You wouldn't not go home for Christmas, but you wouldn't get a driver's license and go out with people in a car. You wouldn't do anything that didn't involve your family. I just always felt so fortunate that way.
Well, your last book, Theft by Finding, this is your diaries and a pretty unvarnished picture of yourself. Apparently you're not very concerned with your self-image, are you?
No. Well, I feel like the worse you admit to being, I think more people can relate to you, actually.
Have you always been like that? I mean, was there a part of you ever that was self-conscious and kind of...
Oh, sure. When I was growing up, I mean, and maybe that has something to do with it. You know, when I'm 61, so I grew up in an era when being gay was the worst thing that could possibly happen to a person. And even if you don't have the word for being gay when you're like 7, you know that you're different from other boys.
I think there's a point in the book when Hugh asks you, why do you choose to focus or remember the negative instead of the positive?
But I don't know. The negative just makes for a better story, I think. If Hugh and I are having, and I say, do you remember the time that you emptied that ashtray onto my lap? Why do you have to remember that? We were riding in a car in Normandy, and I put my cigarette out, and the ashtray was on the dashboard, and an ash flew into his eye, and he picked the whole ashtray out of the dashboard and dumped it in my lap. And we were getting ready to board a ferry for England, and I had white pants on, and then he emptied the whole ashtray. I am not going to forget that.
Well, what's your job? Is it stories or is it the truth, do you think?
Well, I mean, they're the same thing in a way.
So remembering the ashtray in the pants is more interesting than the drive to Normandy or drive to the ferry when everything was perfect and the clouds were puffy and lovely in the sky?
That he ruined all that when he emptied the ashtray into my lap. I mean, I would have just written about that, but then he emptied the ashtray into my lap and he ruined it. So it became a story about that.
Does he mind being the subject of your stories?
No, he usually waits and he wants to read the book when it's in galleys, but he knows that I'm not going to write anything about him. Like I've never written what he looks like naked. I've never written, you know, anything that happens with him in the bathroom or anything in the sexually anything about him. So it's all cosmetic, really. I mean and I think when I write about Hugh, I'm just kind of writing about making a life with somebody. And so I think anyone in the audience can relate to it. You don't have to be gay. It's just if you're trying to make a life with someone and sustain that relationship, then you can relate to it. I mean, there are other people who would write about it, I think, in a way that you would have to be gay in order to kind of relate in a fundamental way. But we're just not that kind of gay men, you know.
How about your family? It's not that you've written about, you know, what they look like naked necessarily or in the bathroom, but things about them, that, well, especially your dad, I guess it comes to me that you spent so much of your life growing up trying to please him. And not that he's in a negative light, but in a real light. And I wonder how he feels reading that.
Well, my dad is the kind of person who has probably the healthiest ego of anyone I've ever met. And so it would never occur to my father that he's ever done anything wrong, ever, in his life. And so he doesn't mind whatever I say because that's, well, that's what a person would do. He doesn't, you know, he's of a generation, my dad, where, you know, for instance, he feels entitled to comment on any woman's body anytime, anywhere. You know, he goes into a fast food restaurant and the woman behind the cash register, he thinks that she weighs too much, he's going to tell her. And when you say, Dad, well, someone needs to let her know. So he wouldn't be embarrassed by that. To my dad, somebody would listen to a story about that and say, there's a guy who tells it like it is. We need more people like him.
I'm speaking with the author, humorist, and New Yorker writer David Sedaris. His most recent collection is called Calypso. I think you also grew up at a time when people didn't talk to their parents about what they observed for their problems. Like in the book, you write about your mom and her alcoholism, and no one in your family called her on it or confronted her about her alcoholism. She eventually died of cancer. But you don't drink, right?
No.
No. Was that, did you see yourself in her or her in you?
Sure. I mean, my mother and I were different kinds of drinkers. I mean, I would drink and then I would write. I mean, I had it in my mind that I could only write when I was drinking, which I don't know how, I guess because I started at around the same time, drinking and writing. And my mother didn't have any kind of an outlet for it. I don't know, it was just really hard. Her drinking seemed an expression of sorrow to me. And that makes me sad thinking about it. You know, when I wrote the essay, I wasn't making any big point. I guess I was just saying that a lot of really good people are alcoholics and they just don't have what it takes. For some reason, they don't have what it takes to quit. I mean, my mother would quit drinking for 4 days and, you know, call me up and say, tell me about it. And then I would call her the next night and, you know, I could tell right away that she was drinking again. She just didn't have the strength to quit. I think, you know, I'm so used to, I'm 61. My mother died when she was 62. And I have moved so many times in my life. And I would move again tomorrow. And 10 years from now, hopefully I would feel free to move again. And, you know, I've learned, or I have a history of changing things for myself, you know? And my mother didn't. And so I think it was unfathomable for her that she could leave my father, that she could quit drinking, that she could start over again. I think 62 felt very, very old to her. And also because she didn't move around much, and she was a very heavy smoker, that, you know, I remember my mom came to visit me in Chicago once, and we were taking the L, and I went up the wrong staircase. And it was a lot of stairs for my mother, and she just barely made it to the top. And then to say, oh, we have to go down, and we have to cross the street, and we have to go upstairs. I felt so bad about it. And I think 62 was old to her in a way that it's not to a healthier person or a sober person.
Yeah, and you almost at that age, are there things that you think of that you can't shake about, you know, dying at her age? Or
I always thought 62? I was going to die when I'm 62. And so I redid my will. And all I'm going to say is a lot of people are going to be really, really happy when I die. It was a lot of fun. It was fun to pick people who would say, who's he? Or people who just wouldn't, they would say, why did he do that? They're going to be really surprised when I die, a lot of people. It's going to be a beautiful day for a lot of people.
We're not looking forward to that day, but that should be a really interesting read in itself. so many people think because they've read your books or that they know you or they've seen you speak and you're so forthcoming, you're so fluid, it seems to me, when you're speaking. Do you think they know you?
Yeah, but that's okay with me. You know, that's why when I meet people, like at a book signing, and it's true, it's just sort of lopsided that they know a lot about me and I don't know anything about them. So I was with an author not long ago. We were being interviewed together. And she said, when people come up to get a book signed, she said, if I don't say anything, I learn how they got there. Because they'll say, oh, I read something of yours in a magazine and then I bought your first book. I would never do that. I would never do that. The fact that they're there is enough for me. And I feel like I need to learn something about them because to try to even that unbalance a bit. So when somebody comes to get a book signed from me, I just start asking them questions immediately. Someone tried to hashtag me to me
really?
A little while ago because she came to get a book signed. And let's say her name was Meredith. I said, Meredith, have you ever had sex for money? But I just thought that was a funny question to ask somebody at a book signing. I just think that that's funny, you know? So, and I do enjoy, like, I love signing books. And I love, because I'm talking to people and meeting them in a way that most people will never get a chance to. You can't go to a hotel and go up and ask the desk clerk anything you want. You can't, a driver, you know, I never learned to drive a car, so often when I go places, there'll be a driver to take me. You're locked up in a space with somebody, so there's a lot of things you can't. I mean, it'd just be weird because you're in an enclosed area together. But if people came specifically to see you and to stand in line to talk to you for 2 minutes, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful little relationship, especially when they know enough about you. So it just really is all about them. I mean, I met a woman a couple weeks ago, and both her father and her brother are in prison for child pornography. Mm. And she didn't come up and tell me that. I asked a question and then asked another question, and then there was that. I met a guy and I said, what do you do? And he said, I'm kind of trying to figure that out. I said, you should be an outlaw. You look just like one. And he said, I just got out of prison for 2 years for reckless endangerment and selling drugs. So that was fantastic, to talk to him a little bit more about that. So sometimes people come up and they have a story they want to tell you, but that's usually not the story that is, there's something more interesting behind it. I remember years ago, I was at the Aspen Comedy Festival. We did a play there, and I saw Spalding Gray do something called Interview the Audience. And he brought three people up on stage, and he asked them questions. And I thought, okay, well, that was fake. That was all prearranged. It wasn't. He was just so good at asking people questions and at making them comfortable.
That would be a great book or a great host, I guess. Conversation starters with David Sedaris. Like, have you ever had sex for money?
Well, but when you think about that as a book, if you thought, well, if the book was edited, then it wouldn't count in a way because he wasn't editing those. The people were live in front of the audience. And so it would sort of ruin the trick in a way. You know, if you said, okay, I'm going to talk to 25 people and then publish it afterwards, it would have to be unedited. But he could have done that. But I think he's probably one of the few people I've ever known who could do that. Unedited conversations with people just based on the questions that he came up with. He pulled them right out of the audience. Mm. But I feel like sometimes somebody will come up to get a book signed and I don't like the person, usually because they're being too controlling, right? And they want you to do this and do a certain way and draw a picture of this, but I don't want them to go away until I like them.
So you make it your work to like them?
Yeah. I think, okay, I don't like this person right now, but I don't want to leave it on this. I don't want to leave on this note.
So what would you say to them?
Gosh, it would really kind of depend on the person. But hopefully I could find some way to get them off that track and ask them a question that would disarm them. And then we could just completely get on another. Like, I need to let them know, this woman came up and she was, I don't know, she got on her knees, right? And I eat dinner while I sign books. So she got on her knees in front of the table, and I think she'd been drinking. And I wrote in her book, "You breathed on my chicken." I don't want that on my book. I said, "Well, that's what you got." I said, "Because you breathed on my chicken." I need to write, "You're a breath of fresh air." And I said, "You're not. You're not a breath of fresh air. You're just kind of annoying, and you breathed on my chicken." But then I tried to put us on a different track because I didn't want to end it that way. Because I want to like the people who like me. I mean, I realized that a long time ago. It's a good policy to like people who like you. Because generally speaking, like writers say, right? The writers I love would all hate me if they ever met me.
Why do you think?
I don't know. I don't know if I just like people who wouldn't like me. Or, I mean, a lot of them were just, you know, like people like Richard Yates. He didn't like anybody, really.
Well, David Sedaris, what a pleasure to speaking with you. Thank you so much for coming in.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Author David Sedaris, his latest book, Calypso, is out now.